Hello everyone, thanks for joining. Let's wait for the others. Oh, there we have Dan. Dan, would you request access to speak so I can give you that access? Hello, you should be able to speak now.
I should be able to, but the question is, do you want me to? Because it's like a Pandora's box.
For sure, we want you to speak. I mean, you have a really exciting project there, so we will keep that questions for later.
Excellent. Well, you know what? You're in the same boat as me. Your project is just as exciting, I think.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of similar when we have when we are looking at to both projects. Pretty exciting stuff coming out.
I also think it's similar because we had the same guy design our UI, right?
Yeah,
Nicholas?
Nico, I think, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So we're definitely similar.
He's doing beautiful work there.
Amazing, just amazing. Just anyone who is looking to do a project of their own. Nicholas, I would say, is just an amazing choice. Great at everything he does, where we couldn't be happier with the work that he did for us, or the work he did with us,
Yeah.
actually.
Actually, he's doing his work really professional, and he has got a lot of inspiration there. He has like everything for every type of project, theme, and stuff like that.
I would say that Nico is probably the most professional and just really, got it together, UI expert I've ever worked with, and I worked with many. So just just like I said, just can't stress enough how good he is at what he does.
Totally agreed. So, Marty's here too. Hi, Marty, can you hear us? Can you talk?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Everyone?
So, what? Who? Hi. Who else do we have? We have the Sigmarouts. I think QX is speaking for them today. Or
Yep, hey guys.
hi. And then we have CW for the Ergo Foundation. I've just invited you as a speaker. So,
Ergo is listening to us. The combined spirit of Ergo. It just says Ergo right there. So it's the combined spirit of the ecosystem is listening to us, guys. So just carefully tread softly.
So I don't know who is actually behind the Twitter account of Ergo. So maybe he wants to speak. I just invited him. And also we have Darkpools here too. Just sent a request to for being a speaker, Darkpools. So I think we can start now. We will record the space so everyone who is watching it right now can hear to it later. First of all, this will be a space about the integration of DAOs into real world businesses and like a little talk about what's going on with all these projects on Ergo, for example, on PyDAO, Zengate, Darkpools, and also the Ergo Foundation. To introduce this Twitter space, I would like to ask Dan first to describe Zengate and what's the mission of Zengate is, and then project and what you guys working on.
Sure. And if you don't mind, I'd like to do that in tandem with Sam, who's the co-founder of Zengate. He's also the speaker. So, well, let me start with what Zengate is about, and then maybe Sam can introduce Palmyra, which is our flagship product.
Sure.
So Zengate, basically, well, just to kind of give you a quick concept of what Zengate is, I basically came up with Zengate because I felt that Ergo really needed more commercial adoption. And even though we have a lot of I mean a great amount of really great projects happening on Ergo, I still feel like we could do more. And since my expertise is in that from working with Cardano, I decided that yes, I'll start this company at what I say is the unofficial commercial arm of Ergo. And with this company, we drive Ergo adoption. So it's an Ergo-centric company, and we're building a family of products with Ergo tech and Ergo in the center. And so our flagship product is Palmyra Comdex. And so Sam can give you a breakdown of what Palmyra is about.
Thanks, Dan. Palmyra is one of the world's first physically settled tokenized commodity exchanges. And currently, we're focusing on commodities which are underserved in emerging markets. And so, with the power of blockchain, there's a lot of interesting stuff that you can do through tokenization and basically facilitate the trade of these commodities in these markets and effectively bring opportunity inclusion to the commodity creators in the space, but also buyers who want to tap into these markets. So long term, we have lots of different plans. We're starting off with a spot market, but ultimately we'll be able to create a futures layer which sits on top of these markets, which effectively opens up things which basically don't exist right now. Futures markets, which investors can speculate on, and businesses in real life can also hedge against. So it provides a lot of interesting risk management opportunities as well for them. So right now we're focused on two jurisdictions. So the Sri Lanka's the first one. We're focused on the Sri Lankan tea market, which is a $1.5 billion export market. And then also we're doing some stuff in the gems and jewelry space, starting off with Thai gold as well in Thailand, which is quite a unique commodity for that region.
Thank you for the introduction. I personally I'm really excited about the future of Zengate, and I was really like I was loving the work you guys were doing and the partnership, especially for the mass adoption of Ergo. And I think that's it's a huge project with a great future. Let's go ahead with the next project. We have Duckpools here. As you might have figured, they are introducing their IDO and their token to Ergo, and it's another great decentralized finance project on Ergo. We are really expanding fast on Ergo, more developers joining on projects. So I would like to ask the Duckpools CEO, I think Kresovitz should be here, introducing their project and talk about their token a bit.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, hi.
Hi, excellent. I mean, firstly, it's probably not great to say the word CEO when the discussion for today is about DAOs. But anyhow, I'm the founder of Duckpools. Basically, Duckpools is a pool-based lending protocol. So basically, if you don't know what that means, is our protocol allows people to both lend to a pool, like cryptocurrency assets and such, and borrow from the pool at the same time. And so you can do this to, as a lender, to earn some yield opportunities on your Ergo assets, which you currently really don't have many opportunities. And for borrowers, you could, use it to obtain funds that you would never be able to attain before using collateral for loans. And basically, our loans are all automated, so kind of in the spirit of DAOs, right? And yeah, basically the loan conditions are dictated by the state of the pool. So that's kind of how our protocol works.
Thanks for introducing the DexPool. By the way, everyone who is listening here, the sign-up form is just live for the EuroPet stake round. So if you haven't signed up yet, you might want to do it after the space. And then what else? What we have Paideia, founder Marty. Maybe you want to share some updates and news, what's happened in the past week and what we have been working on so far.
Yeah, no problem. Well, fortunately, we were able to raise enough funds to fund development to MVP of Paideia protocol. So our team is hard at work on that in the background here. I don't know if you guys have tried the Web2 demo, but you can go to app.paideia.im. You can try it out if you have any DAO tokens from the DAOs that are there. I see Walrus DAO in here. They have a DAO up there. And if anyone wants to start a DAO just to test the discussions, you can ping me. If you already have like a community, we'll be happy to add it. So hopefully in the next 2 months or so, we'll have MVP up and live. We recently brought on Cheese Enthusiast to help us review the smart contracts that we have already written and help us get to the finish line. So hopefully that'll come soon. We'll have it in alpha pretty soon, and you'll be able to actually vote on chain, put a small amount of your treasury on chain, and just experiment with voting and spending those tokens with a vote. So it's really exciting. I look forward to sharing it with you all.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
Alexis, do you mind if I kickstart a conversation about businesses and DAOs? Or did you have more that you wanted to get to first?
You can start, actually, and I will add my questions and topics later on.
Okay, sure. So I'm not sure how many of you listeners have actually started a business or run a business, but one of the things that I was surprised about having started some businesses was how much paperwork there is, how often you need to kind of like speak to a lawyer just to have some decision put into writing. There's like an annual report, obviously. There's auditing. There's just all kinds of little details throughout the year that you have to like get the whole board together. Everyone needs to sit down, agree on certain things. And all that has to be recorded by a lawyer and put into writing and put into like the book for your company, the records. So the interesting thing about using a DAO in place of a traditional corporate structure is that you may be able to automate a lot of that. Over time, we'll find ways to set up sort of all the things you need to do to maintain a business through smart contracts. And it would kind of like reduce a lot of the expense, the cost to running a business, and a lot of the bureaucracy that goes with that, and let people focus more just on running their business. So I think it's a really interesting use case for DAOs, and I'd like to explore how we can do that. Did anyone else want to chime in on that aspect of it?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. You know, I always stress that behind every project, there has to be a healthy business. Somebody needs to be doing business. And, you know, Sam actually knows how, like, one of my kryptonite is admin. That's why me and Sam work so well together, because he's really good at admin and I really suck at admin. I'm good at ideas, you know, ideas, at vision and, 50,000 foot level, but God, do I hate admin, and I have forever. And so I just, you know, I am middle-aged now. So I'm kind of, I kind of make peace with that. But, that's, like I said, that's why Sam is here. Well, that's not the only reason, but that's why Sam is, me and Sam work well together. So with that said, it does depend on where you are and where you set up a business. So, for example, our business is set up in Ireland, in Dublin, Ireland. And there's definitely some steps that are that could be automated, you know, like tax filings, different documentation. I mean, for example, to set up the company, it wasn't just like, for example, in the U.S., if you want to set up a corporation in Delaware, you basically do it online. Bam, bam, you're done, right? You just do an Inc. You submit, you pay. It used to be like $300. I forgot. I don't know. Maybe it's probably more now, but it's pretty straightforward. In Ireland, it's not that straightforward. It took me probably about 2 months to set up the corporation. Different paperwork needs to be physically filed. Lawyers have to be involved, like you said. You have to sign several pieces of paper, sign a company constitution, create a local VAT and an international VAT. And all of this has to be approved. You have to go to the IRS, and not the American IRS, the Irish Revenue Service, and do it through them. And they have their own, kind of weird, processes. So it all this stuff takes time, and all this stuff can definitely be automated. Now, what I am kind of thinking about is, and maybe Marty can kind of bounce it back to me, is, how do we make a DAO? I mean, it can't be done with a DAO, obviously. We can automate these processes, but how can a DAO be easily scaled or adjusted to meet different jurisdictional and local necessities?
I think that depends on the jurisdiction, obviously, in a lot of ways. But I think that there are jurisdictions that are friendly to crypto that are interested in exploring that. For instance, we've recently spoke to a lawyer in El Salvador. Well, he's a U.S. lawyer working with the El Salvadorian government. And they're looking to kind of, they want to fund, and they actually have quite a large fund for innovative blockchain projects. And they've recently passed new legislation which says, you know, crypto tokens are not a security. You can launch a crypto token through an El Salvadorian corporation. And I think it's a place that might be worth exploring, as a place that would build their corporate structuring around, you know, some smart contracts on a DAO. And a DAO. The unfortunate thing is the leader of that country, Bukele, is surrounded by Bitcoin maxis. And as we all know, Bitcoin doesn't have a strong smart contract platform. But I think there's an opportunity there where we can talk to the people around him, and maybe we can get an integrated corporate structure that has, you know, 100% on-chain documentation, so to speak. And if you can build that structure with a lawyer that's very familiar with it, with a country that's very open to it, that could be your framework that you then take to other places and say, you know, it works here, it works like this. Can we integrate it with your existing system?
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. One of the things that we're actually going to be doing is, as Sam said, we're going to be setting up basically a trading floor, right? A virtual trading floor for the commodities that are going to be listed on Palmyra. And so with that, you physically have to be, you can't, you know, obviously it can't be, you know, in the ether. It has to be based somewhere. So you have to say that, okay, so the trading physically happens in this location, right? It does. I mean, it's basically wherever it's hosted, it's hosted. And so with that, you're presented with some issues because, okay, it's futures trading, right? And so how are these classified? Although this is not in any way a security, it's actually specifically a commoditization. It's of a real world asset. There's simply some jurisdictions that just don't have legislation for this. And some jurisdictions have basically financial legislation that says if it's not written, it's not allowed. And then there is actually some jurisdictions that have, and I forgot what the legal term of this jurisdictional makeup is called, but there's a specific name for it. So basically, like, for example, the country of Georgia, the way their laws are laid out, it's whatever is not legal is legal. So if there's a law that says that something is not, if there isn't a law that says something is illegal, then it's legal. And so what you have to do is you have to really think about which jurisdiction can be accommodating for this particular process that you're trying to set up. And like, for example, for us, we're thinking about maybe doing this in Dubai, because Dubai is another country like El Salvador. But I think Dubai is actually maybe a little bit more open to, you know, different kind of, you know, to basically work with you. To set these things up. And also, I think a DAO, where a DAO comes into play, I think a really good place for DAOs internationally would be economic free zones, like they have in Dubai. They have those in Georgia as well. They have those all over the world. I think that is actually the best place, because in the economic free zone, you can really... It basically can work with the people that run it to create a jurisdictional makeup around what you're doing, so that it's basically tailor made for you versus you trying to catch up with legislators.
I might just add in as well, one of the things that Dan and I spent quite a lot of time last year thinking about was where we wanted to start our pilot programs in, and who we want to onboard in which jurisdictions. And one of the things which is an obvious thing, is like some of the largest markets and economies have like very, very complex systems, especially regulatory systems that interact with each other, feed into each other, which makes it really difficult to actually pivot and innovate in. So some of the emerging markets we're now targeting have leaner government structures, which makes, I guess, the automation of these types of things much more feasible if that's the path they want to go down. So I think where you start is equally important as what you want to do.
Alexis, did you want to give an opportunity to field any questions?
Yes. First of all, while we are talking about this, do you already know some companies, projects that have or went through some of these legal stuff and experienced creating a DAO for their project on any of these countries, for example, like Salvador or Dubai? Maybe that's something that people here are interested in.
I don't know any personally. El Salvador only just passed the law this month that opens the floor to this type of innovation. So we'll try and be at the forefront of that. I'm not too familiar with the economic free zones in Dubai. Maybe Daniel, you know anyone who's created a DAO structure there that represents a real life business?
Personally, I do not. However, I understand, and I'm actually going to be in Dubai next week, and I'm actually going to be at the Economic Free Zone next week most likely meet with the director of the place. So I can actually ask at that point. Again, as Marty said, it's really early. It's just being passed right now. But again, places like El Salvador, places like Dubai are in the forefront of this. So even though, I mean, there might be some projects that have done it already. Unfortunately, I don't know any, but these are the places to watch. So if you do want to see what happens, in this particular field, I would say watch El Salvador, watch Dubai, to an extent Singapore as well, although Singapore is starting to kind of over tighten the regulations now. They're kind of doing the same thing that Japan is doing as far as digital currencies and blockchain tech is concerned, where one of the reasons why Cardano was launched in Japan was because the regulatory makeup was a lot more a lot clearer back then, right? Because Japan declared Bitcoin and crypto, well, Bitcoin actually. I'm not sure if it was all crypto, but Bitcoin was declared a legal currency, and so it right away it had all the legislation and all the regulatory makeup attached to regular currencies get attached to Bitcoin, so it was treated like that, right? But and so that's why Cardano launched here. Well, one of the reasons why Cardano launched here is because we were, you know, it was clear, you know, what we had to do to comply with the laws. But later on, what Japan did, and unfortunately it does it quite a bit, it is they saw a boom coming, and they basically got scared, and they said, "Oh my God, what are we going to do with all these, you know, with all this crypto that's coming in through Japan?" And so they started kind of slapping on legislation and slapping on this ridiculously complex and completely unmanageable tax structure, where basically your Bitcoin spending can be taxed between 15% and 55%, and nobody knew which one it was. Was it 15 or 55? And basically, everybody who had Bitcoin or spent Bitcoin would have to go down to the tax office, which actually is mostly still run on paper in Japan. And then the tax office official would have to tell you. And it was just ridiculous. So, and that's basically they suffocated their innovation sector with that kind of stuff. And I mean, Singapore is doing the same in a way. So it's unfortunate, but. Like I said, countries like UAE, Dubai in particular, and actually in the UAE, there are other places that are also trying to do this kind of innovation. I keep forgetting the next Emirate over from Dubai is also trying to do this kind of stuff, and these countries are learning from mistakes that countries like Japan have made. Trying to over legislate and not understand what they're doing, and they're just kind of letting it ride with these economic free zones. I mean, Dubai itself has somewhat more strict legal makeup for these kind of things, but still very inviting. But especially economic free zones are really good because you get to really dial these things in without really having to flip everything around in the entire jurisdiction. So yeah, just keep watching these places if you really want to see what's going to happen with this innovation.
Totally agreed. I think too that there are many countries sleeping on the crypto market and making it hard for everyone, even though it's a big market and it can be really huge for each country's economy. To sum this up, I think the integration of DAOs in such an automated process for creating legally DAOs can be interesting thing for Ergo and for the whole crypto ecosystem, and especially for Ergo can be a good way to promote and invite new developers and projects and also real world businesses. I would love to answer some question here and ask you guys to share your information and experience about that. So the question is from Space Wizards. It's what has been the biggest misunderstanding when describing DAOs to people from traditional businesses backgrounds? As we talk about Palmyra and the integration into the tea markets in Sri Lanka, I guess, maybe you want to share your experience, Dan, first? You there?
Or Sam, if you'd like.
I can start on that. Some of these jurisdictions are very, I wouldn't say opposed, but it takes a lot of time to warm up to introduce some of these concepts. And I actually think instead of actually going directly into the integration of DAOs into real businesses, we also just have to keep in mind where they are starting at in terms of their current, firstly, use of technology in their businesses, and sort of where they want to see and sort of head to as well. So for us, it's been really important to actually start thinking about like which parts of blockchain will be most valuable for the businesses. And it might not necessarily be starting with DAOs, but actually taking components of blockchain and tokenization that they can use. So for us, it's more around, okay, credentialization around DIDs, around the tokenization of the commodities, which is like the first low-hanging fruit that we can tackle. It's stuff that they don't necessarily need to see or know that is running in a decentralized way that will add a lot of value for them and their businesses. So for things like credentials, they're able to show that maybe they're compliant to certain ESG standards in order to sell their tea to buyers from America, for example, or India, which is, you know, quite important. As for the second rung, like we can start thinking about payments. And then, so DAOs, I think, is like the last bit that you can start introducing once you have all of the foundation pieces in order. So like when you do speak to the farmers and the factory owners, it's not so much that you, that we're sort of going in there saying, look, we're going to create a DAO for you, or here's a framework which allows you to create a DAO. But what is the stuff that you really need right now and the next couple of years? And most of that actually is, you know, stuff that eventually leads you to potentially building a DAO or running a DAO. So that's sort of been the main thing for us. And part of that is not so much just around tools, but the user experience as well. So like Dan was talking about at the very start, one of the things Nicholas, who also helped with the Paideia UX, did was really drive a solution which is really easy to use. You can hardly see that it's crypto-based or it's decentralized. And I think that's the way you get adoption. So I see Marty has his hand up.
Oh, I just want to speak to what you said about how, you know, a lot of their roadblocks aren't really related to blockchain. You mentioned something about the compliance with the regulations in their country in order to do business with like US entities, for example. And I think that's someplace where DAOs can really come into play in a transparent way, because you could put all that boilerplate into a DAO where, you know, all they have to do is vote on it and ratify it, and then that's part of their business. And now they're compliant, you know what I mean? If you have that structure already pre-written and it just fills in the DAO details and they vote, it's done, you know? They don't really have to think about it. And just as you said, the UX is so clean and simple that they don't even know they're doing a blockchain thing. It's just like Dan said, in Delaware, you go online, you click a couple buttons, and you've got a business. I think DAOs can take that on in a global kind of way.
Yeah, I heard you guys asking me a question and my mic cut out. That took me a second. What you're saying is actually really, really on point. I think that a DAO can serve as a way to kind of, I don't know what the right word is, equalize, or maybe kind of make these processes a lot more similar to each other, so that you don't have to, you know, break out the crystal ball and see, okay, so if I'm going to start a business in this jurisdiction, what am I going to have to do? Because it is automated. And and also to speak to what you and Sam were saying, one of the ideas behind Palmyra is that, and just like I speak about this during the AMAs quite a bit, for us to get mainstream adoption or mass adoption of blockchain tech, we have to stop leading with tech first. And what that means is we have to stop saying, oh, look at all the blockchain stuff, look at all the crypto stuff. Because the average person doesn't really care what's under the hood. They just care that it does business for them. And so the way that Palmyra is laid out is, if they don't want to know that it's run on blockchain, they don't want to know it's run on digital currencies, they don't have to. They just know that it does business for them, and it does it better, faster, and cheaper, and gets them more income. And I think that, you know, DAO automation should really kind of happen in the same way. We shouldn't really be saying, oh, use a DAO, use a DAO, use a DAO. We just say, okay, you know, this thing that is taking a really long time to do and is a really big pain in the ass doesn't have to be a pain in the ass. And that's how. And then you make it really simple for them to use. You make the UX and UI really straightforward, really low barrier of entry, really low learning curve, and just get them on there and let them decide. And really, a good UX will speak for itself. And I see that Rick's got his hand up.
Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, mine is like a question. Actually, wanted to ask because I saw that this is like a complex project. So I wanted to know, is this project only for professional users or can the just upcoming crypto user also participate in using this project?
Are you talking about Paideo?
Yeah, I'm talking about Paideo. Yeah.
Matt, you want to answer this question?
Sure, yeah. Paideo is for anybody who needs it. So we're kind of speaking a lot about businesses today, but Paideo can be used by anyone. Like some examples I can think of off the top of my head is if you have an NFT gaming guild, you know, let's say Axie Infinity was 250 or something for one Axie. So if you had a group of people who owned one, they could own it as a DAO. That DAO wallet could be used to play the game and they could play in shifts, for example. So Paideo could be used for something along those lines. It could be used by an investor group. If there was I've been offered investments where I couldn't meet the minimum, like say the minimum's 50 grand, but I could get 10 people together who wanted to spend 5,000 each. So you could buy that investment with a DAO wallet, and each of your 10 individual investors would each have like one vote. You could use Paideo for that. I'm sure there's lots of ways that you can use it that I haven't even thought of, and that'll develop over time. So definitely not a requirement that you're a professional or a business owner. Anything you can think of, you can do with a DAO. And it hopefully will be facilitated in a simple way with our UI.
Okay, I actually have one other question. I actually saw you have like about 200 million pieces of the token of the Paideo tokens. So I wanted to know, do you have like a burning mechanism to actually avoid issues of this large quantity of most of the tokens to manipulate the price of the project tokens?
Are you seeing, like, I don't quite understand. You mean the number of tokens is too high for price manipulation, or I don't really follow the question? I apologize.
Okay. I mean the total token is like about 200 million. So I wanted to know, is there like a burning mechanism to actually avoid inflation of these tokens in the price during trading?
There's not any burning mechanism or anything like that planned for Paideo. Originally, when the IDO happened, there was a vesting round, which meant that people wouldn't get their tokens all at once. It was spread out over quite a long period of time.
Okay, that should be great. Thanks for answering my questions.
Thank you. So we have QX raising up his hand. QX, you are there?
Hey, I'm here. Thanks so much. I don't mean to sidetrack the conversation, but I want to jump in because Marty's mentioning a little more than business here for utilizing. And we're the Sigma Knots, and we're, you know, community-based org as far as that goes, community growth. My question is for you guys, for ease of use and for not being scared off for these kind of big tools, and especially if Paideo, for their marketing purposes, maybe pinpoints businesses for those kind of things for that kind of revenue, if that's how the revenue is going to be made. I'll get to my question, I guess. How do we use Paideo in the aspect that from community orgs like the Sigma Knots, or like, as you said, an NFT group, or even I'm in the education business. So as far as student organizations, fraternities, those kind of things, where those things would be very, very handy to use in those groups. How do you envision kind of segmenting that off in Padilla? You know, if I was a small organization of a small group of 10 people or so, and I wanted to create a DAO in order to manage that, instead of jumping into Padilla and maybe being introduced to way more tools than I could possibly imagine, because it's also, you know, available for full-on businesses and institutions as far as that goes. Do you have an idea in mind of how you can kind of segment that so we could go in and maybe say, yes, we're a community. So now we're shown the tool set that is kind of targeted for that community aspect, as opposed to a much more massive set of tools that may be integrating into a business.
I think that's a great point. I think as the platform evolves, we'll definitely have to kind of give different views to different people with different needs. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's a really good idea. The initial launch will typically be, it'll just be sort of a one platform fits all kind of thing, where everyone will have the same view. But definitely as we expand and add more tools for businesses, we'll have to, I mean, we'll probably make it so that if you don't need it, you can hide it, so to speak. And then when you create your DAO, you can choose from a few different frameworks or options.
So while we are talking about DAOs, we have also a question for the Zenge team. So it's coming from Gearmaster. He asked, as far as the commercial adoption for Zenge Global is concerned, what does the next 12 or 24 months look like, and what are you, Dan, most excited about moving forward?
Well, I mean, 12 to 24 months, since we're moving pretty fast at Zengate, that just, well, first of all, that means MVP. So the Palmyra MVP is going to be ready within that time. Also, within that time, I would like to stay bullish about onboarding the factories in our pilot in Sri Lanka. So there's over 500 factories there. And as well as getting the pilot up and running with Osiris in Thailand, really just really getting the volume up. I mean, because that's really that's what it's all about. Where we've been talking about more and more about really kind of hitting it hard. That's what we're gonna do. I'm really excited about that because, if you notice, we don't go out there and kind of make too much unnecessary buzz, and then sometimes people ask us, "Well, what have you guys been up to? We haven't heard from you in a while." That's because we have our heads down quite a bit. But work goes on every day, every single day. We're doing something. We're meeting. We're pushing through. We're creating, and really we're super stoked to see these things come to fruition. And so, like I said, the biggest thing would be the pilot, the MVP. The onboarding of our pilot groups, and essentially just seeing the thing come alive, seeing this thing that we've created with the team come alive and be used for what it's meant to do, and to really do what it's supposed to do, and bring more market exposure to these underserved economies. And maybe I'll just pass it over to Sam to fill in the gaps of anything I said. Anything that I might have missed.
Yeah, I think internally as well, we've been speaking quite a lot around company strategy, and we've got three pillars that we're working towards. So the first is product. So we want a really strong, product market fit and a product that people use and love. And that's really important, like product led to start off with. And the second bit is around profitability. So a lot of businesses in the crypto space are concerned more about growth than actually sustainable growth, sustainably looking at the profitability. So we want to build something where we start making money effectively whilst adding value to the people. I think that's really important. It allows you to bootstrap, takes reliance away from, I guess, funding rounds, and so you can start building products that you want to build. And the last bit's around people. Like, we really care about keeping the company culture that we currently have and building a really good team, because without a really good team, we can't deliver the stuff that we really care about. So those are like the three things that we have our eye on at all times, and what we're working towards.
Another popular question there for you guys, and there were some rumors if you are guys planning to launch a token, and if so, if you're looking forward to use Europlat, for example, to launch a token or not. I know it's really early to ask this question, but there have been a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, sure, and it's fair. I mean, this, after all, this is crypto. Are we looking to launch a token? Yes, we are. Now, it's all about timing, really. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when, and a question of how. Because really, for us to launch a token, it really has to make sense. It really has to have a really carved out utility. It cannot be just, just another cash grab. It cannot be just another, pump and dump type of thing that happens too much in crypto. You know, you have people or projects launch tokens, and it's supposed to, what's your utility? Oh, well, you get yield from staking. And then what? Oh, and you can buy NFTs with it. You know, you can't leave with that. So for us, it's very important to really carve out the tokenomics, to really make them make sense. And this is why it's not going to happen tomorrow. It will take us some time. It'll take us several months to really dig into it and to really understand what the token does and why it's truly needed in the ecosystem and where it's needed in the ecosystem. Now, with that said, the way our platform is designed is we're going to be accepting a variety of payments. Again, which is part of the whole thing with mass adoption. You can't just have one form of payment, but you have to work with on-off ramps. You have to work with traditional fiat payments, banks, and just to kind of use everything in tandem and to really give the user the option. Do you want to work with crypto? Okay. If you do not want to work with crypto, okay. That's also okay. You can still do business with on this platform. So, just to kind of wrap it up. Yes, token. Will there be a token? Yes. When will there be a token? That is the question that we're currently working on.
Thank you.
And just filling in as well, Dan and I, this is front of mind. We spend a lot of time really thinking about it. And so the way we landed is, I think we need to actually prove that there's product market fit first. That's the priority. We need to actually show to the community, to ourselves, to other investors that this is something that people need. And the token really shouldn't be the only thing that actually brings people onto the platform, but it should enhance the experience. It should actually just make things easier as well. And that's the way we're thinking. As for getting community involved, there's a few things that Dan and I have been thinking about, where perhaps there's, other vehicles to actually get people involved as opposed to just the token. So I don't know if Dan wants to sort of expand on that. We may be sort of, this is still sort of far down the track, so it's not going to happen immediately, but we are thinking quite a lot about these things. I can see a lot of hands up.
I mean, I'll just be really quick with what Sam said, and specifically, we're working on, a tool, a tokenized tool to really give the community and anybody really wants to do that, an opportunity to invest in the ecosystem that is going to be there's going to be Palmyra, utilizing a specific type of a token. And again, I'm not going to get into the details just yet because it's really early, but this is just one of the things that we're doing. So it's basically giving the community an opportunity to be involved and to, you know, to kind of dip their toes in things that they might not want to kind of fully dive into, but still want to kind of try out and see if it's for them. So I don't know. I'm actually not sure who was the first one who raised their hand. I mean, Hosky's at the top of my list, but, you know, Hosky's always at the top of my list, I think. Yeah, I think he might be hacking Twitter.
I think Hosky can wait. Bray
was,
Yeah, I think it was Bright. You want to go ahead, Bright?
Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. So I got a couple of questions. Firstly, I just want to ask, like, considering on how DAO could be integrated to real life businesses, have you like considered some of the legal existing and kind of like the regulatory frameworks that are being attached to some of this business?
Well, as we talked and as Matt said, there are some plans to provide such an automated program for new DAOs and projects to get around with all these regulations and laws to get a registered corporation there.
But I think we're at a point where it's so new. It's so new that we're kind of like at the forefront of it. We're kind of like making it up as we go, so to speak, with certain regulators in mind who want to work with us to design these things. So at the moment, we don't have a structure because there's no real platform doing it. So we're going to have an opportunity to write the book on it ourselves and experiment and figure it out. So hopefully you guys join us as a community.
Thank you. All right. I got one more question. So I just wanted to ask, like, out of the benefits you think DAO will be bringing into real world businesses, let's say in the next 10 years from now?
I think the biggest benefit would be to reduce the bureaucracy, the amount of paperwork and manual labor you have to do, and the cost, the expense. Everything that we can turn into boilerplate and automate that reduces the amount of time you need to speak to a lawyer, the amount of time you need to speak to an accountant, file paperwork, talk to regulators. If that's all automated, if you just say, I want to start a business in this jurisdiction, my business will do this type of business, and then you hit go, and then the DAO automatically knows, okay, this is how it looked on chain, these are the contracts, this is the boilerplate, this is the paperwork, it's all done for you. It reduces all that. I mean, that not only does that take time for a business owner that, and you know, you want to be focusing on running your business, it also costs money. It's also confusing. I mean, it can get in the way, right? Like, I don't want to learn how to become a lawyer just to learn how to sell something or how to read legal documents. It shouldn't be that way. And there's a lot of places in the world where they don't have even the legal structure that can facilitate that kind of thing. So once we get those processes in place, build the boilerplate in and eliminate those barriers, I think it'll facilitate a lot of business that was kind of difficult for people to do in the past.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
And then we got Hosky waving his hands. You want to go ahead?
So I just wanted to know if you guys can tokenize anything in the real world.
I think that's a loaded question.
I mean, we can load it.
Oh, anyways, what are we talking about there, Hosky? What are we tokenizing?
Can I buy cinnamon tea with Hosky token?
Well, look, I mean, isn't the whole point of Hosky is worth zero? So what, are you going to give them nothing for their cinnamon tea?
Just, I mean, like, you know, recycle the old used bags already. So, you know.
Well, maybe we can work something out, but that's a niche economy right there. I can't just go to the fact that to the cinnamon factory owners and say, "Hey guys, would you accept shit coins?" I don't know if that's gonna, if that conversation's going to work out.
Your already used tea bags. Make that clear.
For your used tea bags, that's an economic subset. Sam, what do you think?
I'm not going to comment on this.
Yes, Sam. What do you think?
Yeah, put Sam on the spot, okay? He's just like, I'm not going to comment. Mute. Come on, Sam. You can do it.
Do we have enough husky
now? Who's next? Who was the next question?
I think we have Carson here. You want to talk?
Can you hear me?
Yes, hi.
Yeah, it's actually so nice to actually be here. So I actually like have a kind of like a question, because it's actually like a problem over here in Africa. I'm actually from Africa, Nigeria to be precise. So in regulation to especially both cross-border payments and inter-country like regulatories and some other things like that, we actually like have some kind of like restrictions. So I don't know, like how do you actually like plan on like bypassing this type of restrictions? Do you actually plan on like meeting up with the governments and like to talk with them about the DAOs will actually be a private DAO that will actually not need the government bodies to decide any other thing?
Do you mean like could you have a DAO that no one can see?
Yeah, like a private DAO. The one that is actually not public.
There could be a way to make it private on the Paideia website, but at the end of the day, a savvy individual could look on the blockchain, because everything's kind of decentralized and on-chain, and see that stuff is being done. But as long as you don't dox your wallets, there's really no way for somebody to be able to tell.
Okay. Thank you very much for that one. And I actually like have a second question for I think Zenge. Paideia, I actually didn't get the name well. So the question is, you actually said you accept the building of play to end games on your network. So can you actually tell me some games, because I'm actually like a kind of gamer myself. So can you actually tell me some games that you have accepted on your platform for now?
Was that for Zenge?
I think so. There are a lot of background noises. We can't hear you good that much, Carsten.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now. But there are some background noises, actually.
Oh, so sorry.
I think the question was that about gaming for Zenge?
Yes.
I don't know if Zenge offers blockchain games. I think that may be a different platform.
No, this was actually on Paideia, not Zenge. They actually. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you could use, if you wanted to get together with a group of friends and invest in a blockchain game, and then share the NFT and work together to play the game and earn. Then that's something Paideia could potentially do in the future. We'll have to see how that develops as Ergo games start to come online.
Okay, so in addition to that, the DApp connector wallet you actually released, that's Ego, that you actually released last year. Can you actually give us some updates on it?
None of the teams here have released a wallet. I think you may be thinking of Nautilus.
No, like the first DApp connector wallets, Ego released Ego, like DApp connector wallet.
Nautilus or SafeW, yeah. There's, I think that team will release updates in on their social.
Oh, okay. I would actually check that out. Thank you, man.
Yeah, no problem. Ronan, did you want to ask a question?
Oh, yes. I want to ask a question. Actually, this question is going for Zingate. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My question is, how does Zingate's use of blockchain technology specifically improve the transparency and trust of global support chain?
Sam, why don't you take that one? Sam was a lot better at kind of articulating all this.
Yeah, so there's a few things around, I think, transparency and visibility that we care about. So the first bit is around like provenance, which is effectively where has the commodity or where has the product been sourced from. I think that's a really important thing. So for things like gold in Thailand, the Thai consumers care a lot about where the gold comes from or where it's processed in. So Thai consumers care a lot about Swiss gold. So if, you know, a company is importing gold from Switzerland, it's quite important that they can actually show this. And then they melt the Swiss gold and it gets melted into Thai gold, which is of its own unique purity. That's quite important. So that's provenance. And the same can be applied for things like tea or diamonds or like any commodity, just to be able to trace it all the way back so you know where it's from. So that's the first bit, so provenance. The second bit as well around visibility is not so much about where it's from, but what are the various processes that are applied through that supply chain. So that is a really big topic that you can sort of dive into. But so if we just stay high level, in terms of the stuff that we care about right now, it could be anything to do with reporting on things associated to ESG. So that could be sustainability, so you're organically farming. It could be to do with the S&G parts of ESG around, are you compliant with, you know, the like human slavery bills? Like, are you ensuring that you're not basically overworking these sort of workers in these situations or stuff like that? Especially in like emerging markets where things like sweatshops and overworking and slavery is like a actual thing, an actual problem that seems to happen as well still. So making sure you can report on that is like one aspect in the visibility of the supply chain. So those are the various topics that we're currently working on. You can extend it to a whole lot more things. Like you can capture more data so you can improve the operational efficiencies of your own business. You can capture data so you can share that benefits people downstream. Like there's all sorts of stuff. But did that cover it, Ronan?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. I want to ask one more question. This question is about DAO. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the question is, how can a DAO handle the distribution and management of its financial resources?
Actually, the idea is that the DAO does that by passing votes, passing proposals to a vote. So if a DAO had a certain amount of money in the treasury and somebody thought that they should spend 10% of that on marketing, for example, they could make a proposal to say, we want to spend this much money on marketing. We want to utilize it in this way. We want to track it with these KPIs that would indicate whether or not it's successful. And you would sell that to the community who holds a vote, and then people would vote on it, which is all happening on chain. And when the vote passes, then that money would automatically be taken from the treasury and passed to the recipient that the proposal determined. So the idea behind a DAO is that everyone who's a member has a say, and that's all handled with 0% chance of corruption by the blockchain and the smart contract.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for joining, Ronan. And I think we have here finally come with another question, and he's raising his hand. So go ahead, Foy.
Yep. Hi, everyone. I have a question for basically all of you. It's just one question, but it includes all of you. I've seen on other chains DEXs that integrate lending protocols. And I was thinking, is it going to be possible in the future, for example, to lend and borrow a an asset that's been tokenized on Palmyra? And if that's possible, is it going to be possible to decide by voting with Quacks token on Padilla on which tokenized assets to lend and borrow and create some sort of like dark pools hedge fund managed by the community?
Well, to answer the first bit around lending on Palmyra, so that's actually one of the core pillars that we've spent a fair bit of time thinking about. And a lot of the people that are underserved in these communities and in these supply chains are people, sort of the commodity creators at the start. So being able to tokenize stuff that you're producing and use that as collateral is a really important aspect. And making that, you know, being able to facilitate that is really important. It allows businesses to borrow more money to actually create more of what they're producing or spend on other parts of the business to improve it. So access to finance is definitely like a really important part. And we spend a lot of time thinking about how that actually works in practice from a legal and compliant point of view, but also the technology aspect of it as well. Once you tokenize something, where does it sit? Does it sit in a warehouse? Like, all sorts of stuff like that. But the great thing is on the supply chain point, supply chain finance is a huge area that we can learn a lot from and implement a lot of things. So we're lucky that there's stuff that already exists that we can apply.
Thank you. And as of now, Doug Pultz is also raising his hand. You want to go ahead, Doug Pultz?
Yeah, sure. I think I had my hand up a bit earlier for a question for Sam, but I'll just delay that for a sec. Sam talks about, you know, once you tokenize these assets, sort of where does it go from there? I think that's where sort of the dApps come into play. So like dApps like DuckPool, while not really too involved with real world business, once you have the sort of on-ramp being built from like Palmyra and tokenizing an asset, that's when you could start doing some interesting things with dApps that exist on Ergo, for example. They could use it to obtain funds using assets they have on hand or so on. I'll just go to my question for Sam. So you speak a bit before about provenance and the processes involved maybe to create some sort of goods or something like that. I'm just wondering, how do you envision, if you have any information about it now, how do you envision kind of auditing that? Like, how do you actually transcribe those processes onto a blockchain asset? How do you make sure it's written fairly to the chain and that it's kind of not fabricated or stuff like that?
Yeah, so I think there's like two aspects in the way we've been thinking about it. So the first is around like data quality. So the like it's like, I don't know how familiar everyone is around like data models, but good data in is like good data out, shit data in, shit data out. So like making sure that firstly the data component is right is like a huge part. And I think there's a lot of ways that you can provide risk controls around that to make sure that people are doing it in the right way. So that's one aspect. And then the second aspect is around auditing and making sure the data that people are embedding on chain is actually the right data as opposed to just like incorrectly putting it in. So like supply chains have lots of different stakeholders and lots of different actors. One aspect of, at least in the commodity markets that we have, is there's a lot of inspection agencies and audit agencies that already exist. You also have regulatory bodies as well that are doing a lot of oversight. So making sure that they have a part in terms of credentializing and verifying some of the stuff that's coming on chain is the way we're approaching it. So for example, T at factories, they have, well, firstly, they've got technology which scans the quality of the processed tea. You also have inspection agencies and regulators that also do their own form of testing as well. So being able to actually just verify the information, that's the way we're planning to approach it.
Right, yeah. So, like, kind of interesting businesses to do those processes themselves, because it will make their goods that they produce more attractive for buyers and consumers. Like, hey, we've
got processes. Yeah, and ultimately it's difficult to go in and just say, okay, can you just start providing all of this data? Like, it's complicated stuff. And sometimes it's not as easily accessible because perhaps it's not digitized. But the end goal is, if you can create more value for the end customers, but also for the commodity creators, then it's a win-win situation. And a lot of these people just want to create more value for their own business. So if it makes sense, they'll do it. And if they're conscious of that, if they don't do it properly, they'll get penalized, they'll do it in the right way as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also, I was thinking just then, like, you could also add sort of files to the asset somehow, perhaps maybe more NFT based, but like having a video of the creation of like this specific tea bag. But then again, I'm not sure how interested consumers and stuff would be, so maybe there's not enough value for it. But yeah, like, you know, some interesting ideas there. Thanks for your answer.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, we're actually we have been documenting a lot of our I guess travels, in Sri Lanka especially. There's actually going to be we're going to have a pretty long video coming out about the entire road trip that I took with the team over in Sri Lanka, and plus we will be kind of trying to to show the process as much as it is possible to people, because I think it is very interesting to people of how this actually happens. Because when you're dealing with these kinds of economies, there's a lot of perception about, like, for example, when people talk about Sri Lanka, you know, they don't realize, or the Sri Lankan tea trade, there's some aspects that are very just manual, no tech, you know, people out there picking tea leaves in a field and putting them in a giant bag on their back, right? And then there's also, you go to a factory again that might be in the middle of nowhere in Sri Lanka, and you go in there and they have this like high tech tea leaf processing machine that uses a special digital camera to separate different types of tea leaves and put them in different bags. And I looked at this thing, and basically every major tea factory has one of these, and I was just amazed. And I'm like, wait a second. So what does it do? Like, yeah, it uses a combination of high tech to separate tea leaves and to put them in different batches. And so I think it's very interesting for people to see really how there's a combination, you know, how do you combine this real world, old school things, like I said, you know, just being there in the field and picking these leaves, with data that comes from a digital separating machine for tea that is in the same factory that employs people that are going out there in the field and picking these teas by hand, leaves by hand. So yeah, I think it would make a lot of sense to do that.
Yeah, I think having all that as a consumer would be so fascinating, because I'm really rooting you guys on. I would love to see some of this stuff in action.
So we have a couple more questions. We will pick three and then we will come to an end. So we have Lucky Chan here having a question.
Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. Am I sound clear?
Hi.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me up to speak. My question to Mr. Daniel is that, please, can you discuss any partnership or collaborations your project has formed with other crypto industry or non-crypto organization? And then secondly, how does your project plan to drive adoption and increase user engagement? That's my question.
Sure. So I guess our main big partnerships that we have signed is the partnership with the Sri Lankan Tea Factory Owners Association, which we signed in December. And that makes up the bulk of the tea factories in Sri Lanka. So there's over 500 of them in this organization. And so this in turn makes up the bulk of the Sri Lankan tea industry. And so this really is a big one for us, because it really gives us access to pretty much the entire industry. And it also gives us a place where, or an entity that is really willing to work with us to make this happen, to onboard all these factories on there. And so it's really good, because a lot of times what you'll find in some of these economies is a lot of fragmentation. A lot of SMEs kind of doing their thing, but it's kind of difficult to get everybody together in one room. And so this actually, that's what it does. It virtually speaking, will get everybody in the tea industry in one room, all the factory owners in one room. And, it'll be a lot easier for us to really explain to them what's going on, how we're going to do this, and really work with them later on with our team on the ground, which we're forming, which already have Zengate SL, and which we're going to be building out more and more and more, and just really go to individual factories and work with them to onboard them onto the platform. And so, like I said, it's really good to have a central place to start with, where you can kind of get the word out to everybody and get everybody on the same page before you start going to the individual factories of tea growers. And the second one that's really exciting for us is Osiris. So Osiris is a gold broker and trader in Thailand, and I believe they are the largest one in Thailand. They do a lot of sales to jewelry makers and jewelry shops. They do bullion. They've been around for the current owner is third generation. So they've been around for over 100 years, very well established in the market. And this is really exciting for us, not only because they have such a big chunk of the market, but also because it gives us the opportunity to work with a commodity subset. So gold itself has been, it's got a lot of tools in the current commodity trade that they can already use, but subsets like Thai gold do not. And so that is where Palmyra comes in, and that's where we can kind of bring them a lot of value, is to give them wider market, wider adoption, and some of the same tools that standard LBMA gold enjoys, plus attach things like traceability, like authentication, and all these transparency mechanisms that really kind of make them stand out and preserve the brand. So preserve the Osiris brand and what we call brand retention. Because Osiris spends a lot of time and a lot of money on making sure that their processes are transparent, making sure that the processes are sustainable. And so with Palmyra, you'll be able to showcase this. You'll be able to bring that to the customer or to pass it on to the customer. And so the customer can then continue the chain themselves. So if somebody, a jewelry maker, buys the gold from Osiris and makes jewelry from them, they can also attach the information to the jewelry and say, look, this is where the gold came from, and this is the process that it used to get to you. And that's a really big thing in Thailand and really all over the world. So, so those are the two main ones that I'm really excited about. Now, remind me, the second part of your question.
The second part was around crypto partnerships. So I might touch on that quickly. So we spend a lot of time talking to MHS Sam from the Rosenbridge team. We're also spending some time with some Cardano-like companies as well, in terms of using various infrastructure. So we're actually going to be part of one of the Atala beta programs as well. So we'll be using that to effectively start implementing some of our traceability solutions, which we're super excited about. And then as for, I think Dan can probably finish off. I think those are the main ones that we're speaking to right now.
Yeah, I mean, really, we're really trying to be as active as possible in the ecosystem and to really kind of bring all the different, all the different projects together and really work with everybody we can in the ecosystem. And the Ergo ecosystem, we of course have been working, we've been talking with Marty and ErgoPad. We've been working with talking with PyData. About what we can do together, the Ergo Foundation as well, some core developers over there. We've been also making conversations with. We've been talking to Spectrum about really trying to work in different parts of the project together. And so yeah, it's just all about really kind of utilizing each other's superpowers and making business happen.
It's so
sounds amazing. Wow, that's awesome. Thank you very much.
It's great to see all these Ergo projects helping and working together. And then we have also the QX raising a sense. You want to go out, QX?
Hey, thanks so much. This question is actually for Crass. I want to hear his info on his ideas on this. But it could be a quick no, so let's see what happens. So from what I remember from your interview, Crass, you had spoken about DuckPools eventually being handed over to the community in the very end of the final project. So my thoughts are, have you been building specifically with that in mind as far as how what you're building will integrate into a tool such as Padilla? And do you have any tips for people building and starting projects that they can build with that framework so that an integration into that kind of open community management is easier when it's time to take that jump?
Yeah, that's a good question. So firstly, with Padilla, kind of the way I've wanted to structure it right now is sort of keep it open. So we have a budget allocation for transitioning. Oh, sorry, can you hear me? I'm just checking. Can hear just fine? Yeah, sorry. So yeah,
we have a budget
yeah, thanks. It just froze up for a second. So yeah, we have a budget allocation for developing these DAO frameworks and treasury contracts and so on. So definitely looking to use Padilla to help with some of those things for sure. But yeah, as for your question, are we building now with all this in mind? The answer is actually no. So what we're doing right now is sort of building the product first, and then we are sort of in a way hard forking the product. So the protocol will undergo a big upgrade after our IDO, and that's when we'll start actually kind of putting these things in. So the contracts themselves will have like flexibility kind of embedded in them. They'll have options in the smart contracts to change parameters and so forth. So that's kind of where it starts, like, you know, future planning, long-term thinking and all these things. So my advice for someone building a new project would be you could do a similar approach. You could maybe focus on building your DAP first because it gets a bit complicated when you're trying to do all these DAO things. Build your DAP first, and then you could just hard fork it or, you know, just fully kind of upgrade like a V2, V1 to V2 sort of thing, where you start to kind of implement these, you know, things where you can actually vote and change the structure of how things run on the protocol. So, yeah. I hope I've answered your question. I'm not sure if there's any more contours to it.
Thank you. So we have CryptoBus here as the last question. You want to go ahead?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me up here. And I saw Husky here and the title of the of this space, and I just wanted to give you a little hint and some explanation how to get the compliance around the tokens if you're able to do a DAO. For example, we are right now located in Liechtenstein. It's a small country from the right on Switzerland, and there is a, it calls container model. And this container models is like a legal entity where you can put everything in and tokenize it. So it would be a nice feature or add-on for your, I don't know, dApp, that probably to get everything compliance in this kind of tokenization way. And it would be a nice place to get a DAO running and have every compliance settle up. This is the only thing I wanted to say.
Definitely worth looking into, for sure. We're always looking for more jurisdictions that are friendly to what we're doing.
And it's located in Europe, but it's not Europe. So the location, look a little bit deeper at it. The University of Liechtenstein also teaches in DAO and connecting to real companies. So probably it would be a nice, I don't know, way to go and have a look into it. Because right now we are doing it and putting something in the container model. So it's beautiful.
You might want to share some information with us. You can either DM Marty or hear the Spidea account if you want. But thanks for letting us know. I'm happy to have you here.
You're super welcome, and thank you.
So I think we are already like in here for an hour and a half. Thanks everyone for joining. We had the giveaway for all the questions. After this space, I will just pick some random questions, and those who engaged here and will contact you for claiming your prize. Otherwise, thank you, Dan, Sam, and CW, Husky, and the others for joining here. Hope to hear from you guys again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, then everyone have a nice day, evening, or whatever. And yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you to everyone who listened. We really appreciate your support.
See you soon. Bye-bye.